All right, so we're recording. So, hey, welcome. This is the Nights and Weekends podcast, episode one. This is Craig Hewitt.
And this is Ken Wallace.
And we are two regular guys, two dads with 9-to-5 jobs looking to escape the grind, create products of our own, and achieve that freedom that everybody wants. So Ken, I think it would be nice to give everybody a little bit of background on who we are, and maybe before that, a little bit about what the show is going to be all about. What do you think?
Right on. So I'm Ken Wallace. My backstory is I have a 9-to-5 job. I am a web developer by trade, and I do some graphic design, SQL, database work, a lot of healthcare work. My goal, as we said, is to escape the 9-to-5 and get some sense of personal freedom here, freedom with our time, with our freedom to live intentionally and decide what we want to do with our time, who we want to spend it with, how we make our living.
Yep, that's very fair. And my name is Craig Hewitt, and much like Ken, I am I'm a father of two and a husband to a wonderful wife. And my goal really in this journey that we hope to share with you guys is to achieve that financial and personal freedom that a lot of people hope for. And I think, unfortunately, society has molded us, a lot of us, into people who think it's not possible anymore. And I think we're in a bit of a renaissance with technology and access to technology where more and more people are able to do this. And it's really empowering thing to see so many people doing with relative ease compared to what they were able to do just a few years ago. My background is actually in the medical field, working for medical device companies. And I'm currently in a sales role and definitely have the 9-to-5, which ends up being a 7-to-6 job most days, and plenty of travel and time away from my family. And I have two young kids that love to see me, and breaks my heart every time my daughter says something like, "Daddy, if I wake up super early in the morning, can I see you before you go to work?" And I'd love to avoid that in the future. I think being home or being able to work when I want to work is just the ultimate dream, and I would sacrifice, you know, a lot of money that I make and the perks, if you will, that come along with a day job for a lot of that freedom. You know, my wife and I talk about traveling and homeschooling our kids and what would that look like. And a lot of those things are really scary. And I think Ken and I have a lot of similarities in how we probably would approach our ultimate goal. And it really is kind of the start of the journey is, you know, what do you do with your life when it's all yours? So I think that's something real interesting that we'll kind of explore together as we get closer and get into that part of our lives. I think that replacing our income and having the freedom to do what we want when we want is only part of it, and then we'll run into a whole other series of problems and questions. But that's my ramble for now. But it's gonna be a great show, I think.
Your ramble was a better introduction than my ramble.
Yeah, it's.
I had my 10 seconds of stage fright there. You're an old hand at this.
No, so podcasting is a growing experience for sure. That the one thing that I think everyone should do is take a public speaking course. Not that I've done it, but for another podcast I did, I recorded about a 10-minute monologue, if you will, and spent about 2.5 hours editing it afterwards because it was so. It's just so different. It's crazy.
Yeah. I have a lot of similarities in my life with you. When I do commute to the office, it's 2 hours each way. So I get a lot of podcasts in. I'm going to take one ear off of the headphones here so I can hear. 2 hours each way on my commute every single day. This year I called up my boss right after New Year's and I said, "Look, you know, you and I have worked together. This will be 12 years. And this has to be the year of Ken working from home more than he comes into the office. This needs to be the year when I focus more time with my family and my growing son, and I can stay productive at home. I've been working at home 2 days a week, but it really needs to come to the time when maybe I work from home 28 out of 30 days in a month, with 5 kids here, wife, and then 4 hours a day I was sitting in the car. It was just untenable. You couldn't do anything else. You couldn't go to the gym. You can't think straight. You can't be present as a spouse. You can't be a really good father. All these things matter to me.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's the last point you hit on really is a big one, and it's something my wife is very sensitive to, and I'm sure yours is as well, is we get home from a long day and are just worn out, and that's not really fair to them either. And it would be really nice to have something left in the tank at the end of the day when it's 4 or 5 o'clock, and you get home, the kids really want to play. She wants to do something, and you don't want to just sit and stare at the wall for a couple hours before the kids go to bed. I think that might be the best part. I don't know. I mean, my kids are young and just barely in school, but in a couple of years they'll be in school most of the day, and so that's time where I can get work done. But around that, I still want to be fresh and energetic and not just worn out from the grind.
Right.
So Ken, I think we should probably kind of give a little bit of what we want to get out of this show for ourselves and for the people who may actually listen to it. What do you think?
I think they should know that you and I talked a little bit about this, and both of us we both felt that this could be a public mastermind where we kind of, all the venting we would do and exploring. Thinking through and helping one another and holding each other accountable. Why can't we get that on tape and let others benefit from that process and follow along with us? I know my favorite podcast, I really enjoy hearing the journey, the early days of the Startups for the Rest of Us podcast and so many of the other podcasts that you and I both love. I it was almost like catching the next episode of your favorite TV show. It was like the cliffhanger. You're sitting, me, I was sitting in the car for anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours, thinking to myself, okay, how would I work out that business scenario that they're presenting? They've got this challenge, and I'm like thinking along. And by the time I got to the office, I was inspired to do better at my day job. And on the way home, I was inspired to put in a couple hours after the kids went to bed, just because it kept the creative juices going. So I hope we can capture some of that in this podcast.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's right on. I think the combination of a public mastermind and some things we're going to put into place in terms of accountability are going to be pretty cool to see. So we're going to use Stick. I don't know if anybody out there is familiar with the web app Stick. So it's STICKK, which is it's really like escrow for betting, where you put a commitment with a monetary value into the system, and at some point when the time and the commitment comes up, it's determined where that money is going. Is that pretty accurate?
That's exactly right. So you can also choose an anti-charity. So, for instance, if the commitment was we're going to do 10 push-ups a week, and I'm going to have somebody validate that I did them, and if I don't do my 10 push-ups, then I will donate to the opposing political party, or I'll donate to, the opposite view on gun control, or something like that. So there's a lot of great social engineering in the Stick. I guess it's an app and a website, but it's just really a great way to add some gamification to the goals that we all make.
Yep. And so we're going to put the fine touches on what our commitments are going to be in Stick over the next week or so. But it will be a short-term and a long-term commitment. And I don't want to say bet because that's not really a fair thing because I'm not paying Ken anything. We are going to put our money to charity, whether it's a positive or negative charity. We'll work that out. But we are going to have some real money on the line and some real motivation for us from a financial sense. And hey Ken, we could even maybe get some input from, if we ever get listeners, we could get some input from the listeners on where they want the money to go. That might be cool.
Right. Well, let's dive into that a little bit. We were talking about a couple of challenges. You said a short-term challenge and a long-term challenge. I had thought maybe a weekly check-in with some kind of penalties if we didn't accomplish our goals. And you thought maybe a monthly goal that we could have weekly kind of milestones and like we check in and give our update on our progress toward the goal. So if that monthly challenge becomes our short-term goal, how do we define the long-term goal? Is it a fixed point in time, or we should talk through that a little bit?
Yeah, so I have a fixed point in time for myself to, I don't want to say replace my income, but to have sufficient income to, if I wanted to or had to live on it, I could. You know, my family.
So you've got a date circled on your calendar.
It's I have an app in my phone that counts down every day, and it's burning in my mind all the time. So it's motivation at my day job. I'm in sales, so I can make more money if I do well. So that's cool. So and I'd love to talk about sales and the power of learning sales and what I've learned in the last, you know, handful of years in selling that I think will help me as an entrepreneur. But it's cool because you're almost like a little mini entrepreneur in that I have almost complete control over my domain at work and can do things to really make myself successful and things to screw up my career probably just as easily. So it's kind of a training wheels for entrepreneurship almost. But I got off track there.
I'm going to make a note of that because I actually want to come back to that, the training wheels to entrepreneurship. I like that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But so we were talking about
the challenge.
The challenge. And so I think a weekly accountability, I could see it working either way. A weekly accountability thing to say, hey, I'm going to cold email 50 people this week, or I'm going to, you know, do this or that or the other, are kind of process goals. Whereas a monthly small milestone could be, I want my first paying customer. I want to make $100 this month. I want to launch another product. So they're probably just different. And I think that's kind of where we're getting at, is how are those different than the big goal? And for me, the big goal is to replace my income or create an income that is replaceable from my current income. So how about you? How about you? What's the big goal?
That is my big goal. Replace my current income. I definitely like the word freedom. I don't know a better way to describe it. You know, I don't know if you listen to the Tropical MBA podcast, and they talk about the almost the digital nomad term is kind of popular now, about somebody who could pick up a laptop and work from Bali or, you know, wherever, Hong Kong, and they're equally effective. They're getting their job done, and while they're sleeping, the money's coming in. good old passive income never hurts anybody. That's actually not so much my goal as the freedom that my wife and I can look at each other when it just snowed 17 inches here, by the way, this weekend. And we looked at each other and we're like, boy, wouldn't it be great if I was not shoveling snow today? What would that life look like if we could just say, you know what, let's just go to our, you know, whatever summer destination it is. And I don't have to go and then beg permission, or I don't have to go and sell it to the employer. When I started at my current position, I was a freelancer, and I had been freelancing for a couple years. And with freelancing, it's very feast or famine. You don't ever have freedom. You have a lot less of a lot of things, and freedom is one of the things I feel that you have less of. You get more stress, a lot less freedom. And so I had a customer that decided that they were no longer able to pay. They had filed for bankruptcy, and the cash flow was very feast or famine. And so I went to a previous manager who had previously asked me if I would come work with him and be his first employee, and I had turned him down. I'm like, no, man, I'm going to start my own company. I'm making a SaaS app here, and this is going to be the way I'm going. And that was back in 2002. And nobody was really making SaaS apps out of their apartments, you know, back in 2002.
Right.
And it was really actually kind of a difficult problem to take credit cards for something. Convince a business that you were trustworthy enough to pay for them to pay you in a repeating fashion. A lot of the software you could buy, I mean, Salesforce was out at the time. And that was really the big SaaS app out there in the world. There was a lot of shareware that nobody was making money on. You know, you didn't have the 37 Signals SaaS app out yet. So anyway, so I went to my former manager. I said, look, I really have to stay focused on my dream here, but I need to rebuild the coffers. So I'm just going to come work for you for 6 months. And so I got to just tell, I got to be upfront and honest with you. I got to be candid. This is the way I am. 6 months, I'm out of here. He's like, great. Well, anytime you can give me, that'll help me grow my business. So here I am 12 years later, and
right.
I've helped him grow his business. The software I was working on at the time, several friends in the know and the CIO of a Fortune 500 company, for example, told me it'll never work. No one will ever pay you to host their data. Companies don't do that. Companies build their own servers in-house and they keep this stuff in-house and we hire people and we would never pay you for this. Well, here I am 12 years later and everybody's paying for this kind of software. And that software mm-hmm. I had been working on, I licensed to that business. And we've been installing that as a core of our business for 12 years. Software that wow. I, you know, envisioned in 2001, started working on 2002. Had nothing but, you know, I was ramen profitable there in my apartment. And that to me was the training wheels. I felt like I was onto something there. I saw the vision. I could make it work. And then I kind of put that aside for the last, you know, more than a decade because I was very interested in staying stable for my family. And you know, you get content in your lifestyle and you go about your daily business and you want to keep your wife happy and your kids happy. And then one day you wake up and say, man, all those dreams, they're just kind of nagging at me. And I'd love to gain that yeah. freedom again.
So that's really cool. So I didn't know that. So you've kind of seen the promised land, right? You've seen the finish line. At least.
I got a glimpse. There was a light at the end of the tunnel and I couldn't get there. Yeah. I was out of gas. And so I said, I just needed a little more gas to get to the end of the tunnel. And then,
That's huge. That's huge. We have to rethink what our wager is going to be because I might be at a disadvantage.
Well, and you know, in my day job, I build a lot of technology for a lot of not just big companies, but some startups too. And every day I sit down with, you know, a fledgling business and help them, you know, add value to their customers, and which in turn gets them more business. And we find great ways to do that. And it's kind of frustrating to help somebody else build their dream, you know? So I feel like, I've done it for quite some time that maybe I can take some time and apply some of those principles in my own life. You know, I don't think you're at a disadvantage because this is the first time I've got, you know, my own money at stake. Well, since my first, I guess I'll call it a failure. You know, I had to give up on my dream, sell my dream off to somebody else and go get a job. You know, Dan Norris says he was 7 days from going out and looking for a job. That's how little money he had left before he started WP Curve. And I was there, you know. I had one meeting I had to take before I took the job with a customer to hand over some data. And in order to get to the meeting, which was out in the suburbs, I didn't have a car. I needed to rent a car to get there that day. So I pawned my laptop to go to the meeting. I mean, that's how tight it was. You know, I remember those days. But now, you know, I'm not just by myself in an apartment. I've got a mortgage, two cars, you know, a wife who doesn't want to be homeless, you know.
Yep. And I think talking about our stories and where we're coming from is pretty different. I mean, with respect to a lot of the other shows that are trying to achieve the similar things. I mean, there's a lot of 25-year-old guys that don't have a care in the world and don't have a lot of responsibility out there. You know, you and I both are 30, mid-30 kind of guys.
Oh, you can say the number. I'm 37.
Yeah, so I'm 30. I'm 34. My wife doesn't work. It doesn't sound. Does your wife
Yes, she
work?
works 2 days a week.
Okay. So, definitely kind of the breadwinners at least, young kids, yada, 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 typical middle class suburban whatnot. But I don't want to say a lot to lose, but a lot to lose, right? I mean, you lose it all back in 2002 if you would have been able to go through with the path you were on, and you strike out or you hit a home run, not a huge deal if you strike
Right.
out, right? Now you lay it all on the line and you get kicked in the nuts, and that's a big deal, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a big deal. And I think that's part of the approach that we're both taking to this, and part of how we're going to implement and be smart about building a real business, not just, hey, this is a 6 month thing to build a house of cards to get ourselves to 10 grand a month. That is the absolute damn last thing I want, is to do all this work to then be left with less than I
Right.
have now.
And let's make it clear, you and I both are bootstrapping businesses. We're not looking to build some kind of smoke and mirror show that we can go sell to investors. We're looking to actually validate a market and provide value to customers who will in turn pay us for that value. And but we're doing that nights and weekends and with a lot of missed sleeping opportunities and the stress that comes with boy. That day is approaching. You've got a countdown app on your phone, man. I can't imagine if I had to.
Yeah, it's no bullshit, man. I mean, I have just over a year, right? So it's not a hard and fast day like, some contract at work is going to run out. I mean, I don't think, I don't worry about my security there, but it is a goal, right? And it's a goal that I've had for a long time. It started at 500 days, so it's been going for a while, and I've definitely made progress
Hey,
since
what's
it
the countdown
started.
app you use?
And oh, I don't remember, to be honest. I'll put
That'd
it
be
in the show
awesome.
notes. I think it's called Next
I
Day.
want to do that. I
I don't
want
know.
that in.
Shit.
I want that on my mind all the time.
Yeah, I think it's maybe Time Sense, or I don't know. I'll look it up. I'll look it up and we'll put it in the show notes. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's a basic app, but it just counts down. You can pull it up every day and it tells you how many days to a certain date in the future. It's very, very straightforward. But yeah, so it's real, man. I mean, and we're all on the same page, I talk to my wife about it and she says, hey, we're gonna have what we have when that time comes, and if we agree that it's enough, we're gonna make the jump. I in a previous time in my life listened to a lot of Dave Ramsey, and he has a saying where he says, if you're gonna jump off the dock, pull the boat up first. And that's what we're doing. We're trying to, build a boat, pull it up to the dock, so when we jump off, we're not drowning. And I hope we can make some kick-ass boats, because we have a year, right? A year is a long time. A year is a short amount of time in a sense, but it's a long time to thoughtfully and intentionally put something into place that's going to have value in the future. And I don't worry that it's not enough time. Even nights and weekends, if I can spend 10 hours a week, I still think that's enough
Yeah, I think
time.
it's doable, very doable. It's going to take some smarts, though.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, hey, I think segueing into what the specific approaches and projects, at least at this point, are going to be for us might make some sense. What do you think?
Think that's a great idea. Is this a good time to mention the podcast that you brought up to me earlier today? Let's see. I'm looking at your agenda here. We're on our Google Doc.
Yeah, so right, so Startups for the Rest of Us is a podcast that Ken and I both listen to a ton. We're both members of the Micropreneur Academy, which is the sort of private membership forum and academy that Rob Walling and Mike Tabor have created, and they have a, I don't know, a theory or a method of really starting from scratch. And they call it the stair-step approach, to start small, get some early wins, build on that to the point where you're creating a real badass kind of web business. And I think that's what the framework that we're both going to use.
Okay.
Is that what you were getting
Yeah,
at?
I listened to that episode today at your suggestion. I hadn't gotten to it yet. And it's exactly what we need to do. Get some small wins. So what were the things on your list to accomplish that? What's your first business?
Yep. So the way they lay the stair-step approach out is the first thing you have to do is just make some money. And so towards the end of last year, I wrote an ebook. It was about 35 pages. I published it under a pen name just because I was
Nice.
pretty unsure of myself. And it's I won't say it sucked, but it wasn't great. And I made about $50 last month with it. So I was pretty proud of that. I hope to make something like that
Any
going
marketing in that?
forward. No marketing. Did it on Amazon, self-published through KDP Select, which I would love to talk some more about in the future because that's going to be a pretty big part of my, first couple of stairs and the stair step approach. It's super easy. I wrote it in Google Docs. I downloaded it from Google Docs into a .doc format and published it to Amazon. Got a $5 cover on Fiverr, and so I've had about $45 of profit in the first month. There's some guys out there making. There's this guy Steve Scott making 40 grand a month selling Kindle ebooks.
Yeah, I actually participated. I listened to one of his webinars.
Yep. So I don't know that that's a real business, right?
Well, it is for
I
Steve Scott.
think, yeah.
Can't it be for
So
you?
I think then this is something that maybe I'll touch on a little bit, but I think that he's doing a lot of internet marketing, which is not bad, but he's doing a lot of internet marketing tactics around his ebook business, which probably is smart, like you're saying. But you got to keep writing books to make that consistently happen, I think.
Well, on that note, there's an Irish guy, really heavy Irish accent. Anyway, he hires ghostwriters. So what he does, he goes on Amazon. He does basically what would be the equivalent of keyword research 5 years ago. He goes on Amazon and he looks at the best selling in each of these different Kindle categories. And he doesn't care, it's fiction, nonfiction. He doesn't care. He just looks to see the popularity of the book. And then he writes, I won't say copycat books, but books in a similar vein. And he hires a ghostwriter. He hires on Fiverr somebody to make a cover, and he submits them. And if he gets a
Really?
fraction of the popularity that the original got, he wins. And for every 100 books he puts out there, he gets 50 or 60 of the books. And he's got a lot of books out there. He was going through the list. And he pays ghostwriters anywhere from $6 or $7 for a book, all the way up to $50 for the really good ones. And this guy makes a ton of money. I mean, he just basically, and he's got all kinds of pseudonyms, of course. They're not all under his name.
Sure,
So I'm
sure.
not saying that you can go that approach, but there's ways and tactics you can use, even on Amazon, to target a niche that's popular and current, and people are seeking more literature in. And there are ways to get the literature written, even if you don't have the time.
Yep. So my first book was in the real estate realm, and I'm going to pivot a little bit from there in my next book, but it's all going to be directing back to a website called investingengine.com. And so all of my books are going to be around investing. And I very well may hit you up for that guy's name and try and learn some of his tactics because I just
It's in my Evernote here. I'll have to look it up.
yeah, so I just listened to the Tony Robbins book on money. So I'm not a giant Tony Robbins fan, but his book is actually pretty interesting. It's kind of half an expose on how the financial industry is screwing us all in fees, and half, hey, save your money, invest it in smart mutual funds that are low fees, and how to achieve good asset allocation.
Sounds a lot
But
like Dave Ramsey's advice.
yeah, it's all pretty basic and smart, but it's about my wife read the hardcover book. It's about a 600-page book. And so I got thinking to myself, similar to what this Irish guy is saying with writing books, I thought I could take a half of a chapter and write a kick-ass blog post from that book. Just basically not paraphrasing, but I mean it's not rocket science, right? It's how to find a fee-only financial advisor, right? Someone who's not in it for selling you the best product to make them money, but in it to have you profit the most. So I don't know. So that was a sort of a tactic I thought for content creation is take an existing piece, really, really, really recycle it. I don't want to call it article spinning. It really is recycling. Just rewrite the whole thing, but basically take the meat of the content of an existing piece and create some content of your own from it. So I probably will do some of that. I also am going to, I'm in the process, I'm about 5,000 words into a book on my experience and what I'm learning on buying websites on Flippa. So I've been trolling Flippa for about 2 months now and have read a bunch of stuff, including about a 50-page book on it. And there's a ton there. I mean, it is an absolute garbage dump of websites. There is a ton of shit out there. And there's some really good websites. I mean, I missed out on one about the third day I was looking. I missed out on just a gem. I mean, it was the perfect thing, and it ended up selling about $300 over what I told myself I would spend originally. And so now I'm kicking myself saying, God damn, $300 is nothing compared to now the 6 or 7 weeks of time that I've spent looking almost every day at just absolute horseshit that's on there and all these people trying to scam you. I actually put in a bid that was accepted and then they actually went into escrow and then escrow realized that this guy had like 6 or 7 different usernames from the same IP address signing into escrow.com. So they returned my wire and I mean, so terrible experience. But anyway, so I'm learning a lot and I'm gonna write up a pretty good book on it. It'll be about a 50 or 60 page book on it. And then I'm gonna create a web course on it. So I think that there's a ton of money to be made with online education info products, if you will. And the ebook is gonna be part of a lead funnel to getting people to the course. So I think there's a lot there. I think there's a lot there. That's a lot of work. The book will take another month,
There's
probably.
probably an email course in there as well to get people into your funnel.
Yep. So a lot of things I think to do it. And it's a good industry. It's a growing industry, and it's something that's in my plan, right? So as I make money through my Kindle ebook or my course, I'm gonna put it right back into investing in my business, which hopefully is acquiring some more web properties. So, WordPress plugins, a good theme maybe to sell. I don't know how much you can get for those anymore. A simple web app, even something like a good affiliate site that I would buy. I just want to pour everything back into the business for this year and kind of snowball it. So that's the those are the first couple steps. And then just to round it out, I like to think a little bit as a dreamer. And my long ball shot is going to be creating a premium podcasting platform. So right now, everything is free. Everything runs through iTunes or Stitcher or whatever sort of service out there, and everything is free with the exception of closed-ended domain-specific podcasting apps. So, the one that comes to mind is in the kind of the financial realm. Some of these guys have their own apps that you can download paid-only subscriber content, and I think there is a giant industry out there for any podcast that's out there right now to put out premium content that's only available to paid subscribers. Because podcasting, I mean, shit, we're doing this for free, right? Hosting's charging us $15 a month for the audio files. Your web hosting, say it's a couple dollars a month. Our time is worth a lot. The resources are worth a lot. I'm glad that you and I are here talking about this, but I would never think this is a business. if you and I get 60,000 downloads a month, I would love to get paid for some of that. And I think that I mean, you think about guys like John Lee Dumas, Pat Flynn, they could put out one extra show a month, charge a dollar for it, and make a fucking killing. So that's a dream. It's not a dream, but it's long ball. It's not gonna get me rich this year, even if I spent all my time on it. I mean, it's like creating cable TV.
Right.
It's not an overnight win. So that's the vision of in the future what I really want to do. And really the goal is to supplement and replace my income so that I can focus on that. 'Cause I think that's just a giant opportunity. That's my rant.
I'd like to the last part of your rant. I'd like to explore that in a future episode because I've seen some attempts at that. And
Okay.
but I don't know if you want to spin off into that tangent right now. It sounds like you're not starting from zero at all, man. You've got 5,000 words of an ebook written already. That's not an ebook. That's like four ebooks, right? So that's like a real book. That could be like that's like the leather bound edition, okay?
So yeah, so an ebook is about 30,000 words.
Okay. But
Yep.
you're aiming for something that's more like 50, 60 pages, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be more on the order of what, 50,000 words?
Yeah, probably something like
Yeah.
that. Yep.
Okay.
So I cheated a little.
That's all right. So
You're not starting from scratch either, I know, so we'll call it
I am
even.
not starting from scratch. All right. So I have, but I only have maybe 2,000 words on my ebook. I'm doing an ebook on something that's very, well, I can't say near and dear to my heart because it bores me to tears sometimes, but I know a lot about it, and there's a lot of people looking for answers about this topic. And that's about the topic of HIPAA compliance and healthcare compliance. So
You want to explain what HIPAA is for those
HIPAA,
people not in the
and
medical
high
field?
tech in the US are privacy-related legislation that govern the way that you handle information between providers of healthcare and partners who might need to use that information to either facilitate further treatment or to handle some part of the patient process. So there's a lot of misconceptions around that, and there's a lot of things that people don't know that there are landmines that they get into. So I got a lot of domain experience in that. And I don't know how many times I can listen to Pat Flynn tell the story about taking the LEAD exam and putting his notes out there to help people, and then making money off of that. And I'm like, well, I had to teach myself how all this works from scratch, right? And
Yep.
so if I can help anybody out with this, I'm happy to do it. And the good and bad part about this is the HIPAA environment in the U.S. changes a lot during the year and from year to year. Because there is a department in the government that sits there and interprets the laws, and they're free to where the legislation left blanks, they're free to fill in the blanks and to give their own guidance to the way doctors' offices and hospitals and app developers have to go about their business. So where there's a hassle, there's an opportunity, right?
Sure, sure.
So I'm about 2,000, 2,500 words into that. I've got the domain bought, and hopefully by Thursday or Friday this week, I'll have the landing page up, ready to start doing some content marketing with it and just lead generation, get the email list going.
So you're going to plan to sell that on your own domain and not on Amazon.
To start with, I actually do want it to be on Amazon because there is a real shortage of information in this specific niche on Amazon. However, obviously you can't find out if people are looking for it on Amazon and coming up short, but I personally looked for books on this. I would have been happy to just I would have bought four or five books if I had to put it all together and read five books and then collate the knowledge. I would have done that, but th they didn't exist. So there are some general guides on HIPAA for, if you run a hospital chain, or if you are a doctor,
Right. Not useful for you.
Not useful for where I was, and that is in my 9 to 5. I have a customer who is a downstream provider of services for major insurance companies. So a Blue Cross, a Blue Shield, for example, will come to them and say, "Hey, can you do this, these set of tasks for us to help us fulfill the benefits that we promised?" And so it was both from the software developer standpoint, the CIO standpoint, the CTO standpoint. What is it that I need to know? Because I know how I would write the software, but then what are the gotchas to make it fit within this legislation?
Sure.
There isn't a book out there that tells you how you need to change your database to fit the legislation, or how you need to reconfigure your web server. So those are books that need to be written. So that is kind of the first step in my stair-step approach. Now I've been to MicroConf the last couple of years because I've had this budgeting app on my mind, and it's basically an app that I've been using personally for since 1999 as an Excel spreadsheet, and it's very much the same story as Jesse from You Need a Budget. His story is exactly mirrors mine. What differs is his Excel spreadsheet looked different than mine. His whole money philosophy differs from mine. And oh, by the way, he's really successful marketing his right now, and I haven't marketed mine. I've been busy the last 12 years helping other people. So I think it's time that that gets out, because finances and budgeting and helping out people that may have negative 35 bucks in the bank right now, because of the overdraft fee on top of their $0 in the bank. That's near and dear to my
Sure.
heart. I've been there. Like I said before, I've been to the pawn shop. A lot of people haven't been there, especially a lot of people that write budgeting apps don't understand how to help people budget who have $0 in the bank, or how to help people budget who have less than $1,000 in the bank, or who have less than the optimal amount of money. How do you get them from zero to where they need to be, where they can use a Mint, where they can use a YNAB or any of these other budgeting apps? Yes, there's a ton of personal finance apps out there. It's really hard to find one to get these people started in a program that teaches them healthy money habits. And it's even harder if you're in a family situation where your wife wants to spend money and you're at work, and on the way home from work, you need to grab a gallon of milk. And although, by the way, you didn't know that your wife already grabbed a gallon of milk. And things like this. Obviously, not so much the gallon of milk, but things like this come up in budgeting where it really has an impact on people's budget. So I have a way to help people out with that. I need to get it done. But the problem is, it's a SaaS app, right? And so Rob in their latest podcast and highlighted that maybe you don't want to start with a SaaS app as your first app. And having built a lot of SaaS apps for others, I understand that. But I think I have a leg up here. I have a cache of knowledge that can help me there. Obviously, each one's unique and each one has its own pitfalls. So I am going to go with the ebook and the info product first, just to get some funds in the door, get that snowball rolling. And with that money, I'm going to roll it back into hiring a developer, because I don't have the time to build a SaaS app these days. Back in 2002, when I was working in my apartment freelancing, I could work 12, 14 hours a day on it if I wanted to, and nobody cared, right? But today, people care, and I might get an hour a night, and then one of the days on the weekend in total, I might get 8 hours in total on a weekend, and so that's not enough to do a SaaS app in a timely fashion and get it out there and then support it after it's launched. And it's mind-boggling. So I need to hire a developer to help me out.
So that's a really interesting point. So you have a very technical background making web apps at work right now, and are going to choose to outsource your big project. I mean that's something that a lot of people need to hear on both sides of the fence, right? So one is, I'm not a technical person, I can't do this. Well, you're a technical guy and you're not doing it. Or I'm a technical person, I need to sit here and code all day. I mean, I know tons of people, not tons of people, dozens of people literally, that have outsourced apps from both sides of the fence and say it's the only way to go, aside from buying an already existing app. So I think the days of people sitting and hacking away for 3, 6, 12 months are almost over as founders.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I've seen enough software being written in a number of languages that I know what it takes. I know that I don't have that in my spare time. Well, let's just talk about it from one. There's a lot of facets to this. The first facet is, you know, I work 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours a day writing software for people, managing a team of people that write software. So I write specs, and then I fill in and write software where I have to, database work, compliance work. When I get home, you know, at that time of the day when you just want to veg out, not think about what you've been doing all day.
Right.
So let me get this straight. You're signing me up. You know, this is what my brain's telling me. So you're signing me up to do more of this into the evening. And oh, by the way, your son who's 2 wants to, you know, play with you with his new toy, and your wife hasn't seen you all day. And oh, by the way, she's been home with a 2-year-old all day, so she could really use your help.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the moments where I think, okay, it's time to realize, what do you have more of, time or money? And so one of the limiting factors, and some people call it the golden handcuffs, right? So you get to a certain point in your career, you're making enough money where you're comfortable. And some people might be content with that. But the problem with that is it's hard to develop that inertia and get the flywheel going again, where you're hungry again and you're really antsy to get into it. All that to say that when I get home, I realize that I need to put my energies to a place where I can really do good. And for this, it's got to be the marketing. I've got to really develop the how and the why for why people should use this different budgeting system, and do all the marketing work. All that coding, somebody else can take care of. I'm happy with that.
Yep. Yep. I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I think that you look at the things you have to do and I have to do and anybody who's creating something has to do, and the coding is very, very expendable.
Right.
Anybody can do that. You're the one that has the vision for marketing and lead generation and conversions and copywriting and all those sort of things. So that's real cool. That's real cool. Well, I think we are on similar paths. So that's pretty cool. I think it'll be nice for us to be going down at least the first part of the road kind of together. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And then maybe we'll even put our heads together on this podcasting network. I don't know. Because
yeah,
I actually gave some thought to that. I was listening to another podcast, and they were actually looking for investor dollars to do exactly what you're talking about. And really big name broadcasters, by the way. People you would recognize if you listen to some of the bigger NPR shows.
Yeah,
and right. They were trying to put together a whole investor pitch. And so they went to Silicon Valley, and they're going to tech investors, right? And to all these different investment firms and saying, hey, here's our pitch. Here's our startup. It's a media corporation that makes podcasts for premium podcasts. And investors are just like, why would somebody pay for this? The podcast is by Gimlet Media. It's it's just slipping my mind now.
It's not startup.
It is. Alex Blumberg.
And he details
like, if you listen to the first episode, it's a little painful. It's awkward where he's forced to rethink it. And of course, the whole podcast is beautiful because, you know, he worked on This American Life and was it Planet Money or one of those other big million subscriber podcasts. And
more beautiful than our podcast.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I haven't seen you edit this one down yet, so the gauntlet is thrown down. But Alex Blumberg also did a creative live class on how storytelling and how to get that kind of Radiolab or This American Life feel into your podcast. But so he went and tried to pitch this whole thing, and they document it beautifully of just like the inner struggle. And he's thinking to himself as he's talking, wait a minute, why would somebody believe the words that are coming out of my mouth? You know, and I kind of like that inner monologue. But
Yeah,
anyway,
for sure.
it's they were looking for millions, and they were going to hire, and they were hoping to launch 12 podcasts in the first year and 12 in the second year. And they were going to hire hosts, like give them salaries. Leave your job, come here and host a podcast every week. And this is what you're going to do. This is your format. Each show would be a little different, almost like television corporations are put together, where you come up with show ideas and you have writers. And then they were going to hire producers and editors, and I mean, a lot of money they're going to throw into it. So I don't know if you're thinking of it that ambitiously, but as far as a platform can mean a lot of things. So I'm curious to see what you mean by a platform for premium content, because I think you can have a platform for premium content without going to all those measures. You don't have to recreate national public broadcasting.
No, so I mean, just real quick, the vision I have is basically, your favorite show offers an extra episode a month or a week or however much, or a separate podcast in its entirety that is only available for people to pay for it. So it's really, it's the true bootstrapper mentality, right? So I'm not going out and creating another show. I'm not going out and finding great talent other than the people that are already doing it with their shows, with their audience. Those people on their free show can say, hey, if you like this, try my premium show, go over to here, blah 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 blah, and sign up. And the big thing is pricing. How do you price that as the platform? How do you price that? Do you say it's free to host a show and we get half of the money you bring in? Is it $100 a month and we get 20% of the money you bring in? Is and so I'd That's the big question, because I think you land a John Lee Dumas
Or an
and
Andrew
you're
Warner.
done,
Or an Andrew
or an
Warner.
Andrew Warner, or you're done. That's it. And so you would start small, and that's going to be my
Or the
plan
Tim Ferrisses
is
of the world.
because this is my problem with podcasting is it's just a great big reach around, right? It is, hey, blah 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 blah. This is my show. I do this for free every week. It's 45 minutes. Come over and sign up for our newsletter, right? So, Breck Palumbo and Scott Yule, right? Those Bootstrap with Kid guys, they're great. And they kind of make a joke about go over and sign up for our newsletter. It's awesome. And we're going to send you this treasure chest
Secret
of
shit.
all this, secret shit. And it's fine, right? And that's internet marketing, right? But what if you didn't have to do all of that crap, right? What if you could just say, hey, I make four episodes a month. Now I'm going to make five, and I'm going to make 50 grand for one of those episodes.
That's a whole different, yeah, that's a whole different rubric.
And I'm not going to have a website. I'm not going to have a mailing list. I'm not going to bug people. I'm not going to worry about bounce rates. People will come over to this app that will host however many shows we have, and they'll be able to pick, I want this one, this one, this one. Pricing, I have no idea how pricing will work. It would be by the show, I would think, or maybe have an unlimited rate, kind of like Kindle Unlimited, and just go from there. And you only need one or two big
You have
names
to
to
find a
sign
way to
up.
entice the fledgling podcasters that are just starting out. Because if you get them when they're just starting out and get them comfortable with it and get them in the habit of doing that extra show, like the crack dealer, they'll keep doing it. As soon as they, I love the idea. I don't want to horn in on your idea. I don't want to sign myself up, but I'm looking forward to hearing more about
Yeah, so I, it's a pipe dream, right? But I think it has a ton of
That's
potential,
one of the
and
most
that's why it's
doable
long
pipe
ball.
dreams I've heard of. Well, since
Yeah.
we're on a tangent here, we started talking in the Founder Cafe about the podcast duel, Bootstrap Duel podcast that kind of inspired you to post in Founder Cafe. Those guys are doing a race to six figures a month of recurring revenue. Actually, do they care if it's recurring? Just six figures in revenue a month, right?
I think it's recurring, but they're both.
Recurring would be awesome, right? But I
Yeah,
don't,
I think it's recurring,
because there's going to be some
and they're
churn.
both in productized services, is the kind of
Pretty
caveat.
hefty priced ones. Each of their let's call it installs, but each of their services is a five-figure service, right?
Yeah.
At least four figures. So there was some controversy of whether or not that was even realistic to go for $100K a month. You know, I work in a firm now and we bill $100K a month easy. So, but that's a service. That's a consulting firm. So right. If...
And how many employees you have?
We're at 20.
Yeah, so that's a business.
That's a real, yeah, that's a business with a bathroom that with toilets that clog and a refrigerator that needs stock. Yeah, that's a real business.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I don't know how you make a service business that's not like that. You know, like, let's talk about the WP Curve guy. How would you, you know, Dan Norris, I'd love to talk to him more about this. Maybe he'll be at MicroConf one of these days or something. How many employees do you think that guy has at, what's the fee now? Is it $80 a month for unlimited WordPress?
Something like that, yeah.
Unlimited WordPress tinkers, and come on. It must have he must have really signed up for the, you know, virtual staff finder program of Philippine employees. I just don't know how you do that in the States, right?
No, and I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, so he's an Australian guy, right? So getting to the Philippines or Bali or something like that is not so hard. But for us, I mean, for you and me,
yeah,
not so easy to find the people that are reliable enough to build a business around.
Yeah, and to keep them and not have them take your customer list and strike out on their own.
Yeah. Yep.
That was a tangent on a tangent. Let me reel it back in. What I was getting at with the Bootstrap Duel was, why isn't there more of this podcast throwdown where it's either a friendly competition between the hosts where they can up the ante with one another? You know, I never saw that with Mike and Rob on Startups for the Rest of Us. You don't see that with Breck and Scott on Bootstrap with Kids. Justin and Jason on Texting. I mean, I can name a ton of people that I listen to. You don't hear that friendly competition. So I'm looking to figure out how we can really insert an element of friendly competition in our podcast. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, yeah, like you said, we have to hammer out what that means specifically. But I think at least in that kind of short term, monthly deal, if not shorter, we can put some timelines in that make it interesting for us and for probably the people that will end up listening to say, hey, this is where we were last time, this is where we are now, and that's what it means.
I think it's crucial. For... yeah. So we start off the episode, and if I hear from you, Ken, last week you said, here's item one, item two, item three. How'd you do on the first item? And, you know, don't let me get off with a sheepish answer like, oh, you know, a lot of things came up. No excuses. It's did you finish it or not? And how are you going to not let that hurdle happen again this week? You know, things come up. You know, we're dads and we have day jobs. So like your house has been afflicted with the, was it the pink eye plague of 2015?
We have ear infections and pink eye in my house right now. It's horrible.
Every time my son takes a shower, he loves to go jump in our bed, a king size bed, and rub his naked butt on all of our pillows. Right? Like, dude, I look at my wife. I was like, that's how you get pink eye. Right there.
That's how it happens. Boy. That's a boy for you.
So, yeah. I mean, any of that can derail the best laid task list. But that's why I like the challenge, because that means, you know, if I'm running late, it's the, you know, the night before a podcast. And I gotta get some work done. I guess I got to lose some sleep that night. And I'm willing to make that commitment.
Yep, I think it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun to see that dynamic over time and how it affects our productivity relative to what it would be otherwise.
Right.
Yep, pretty cool.
The only other kind of challenge I've heard of in a podcast, and you know, obviously I've not listened to every podcast known to man, but in the ones I've listened to, maybe about 50 that I've followed at various points the last 2 years, I remember fondly the challenge, the friendly wager between the Texting guys and Startups for the Rest of Us, where Mike and Rob challenged Justin and Jason to have more iTunes reviews, more 5-star reviews.
Okay.
And so they were prodding their listeners, like, we got to beat these guys. So we're imploring you, go on, just open up iTunes, just leave us a review.
Yeah.
I love that. And I actually tuned into both episodes because you hear them both kind of poking at each other across the. Why couldn't there be a platform where you could go on podcast competition or podcastthrowdown.com, right? And just like almost like the ice bucket challenge. Say, we challenge those guys, those jerks over at Bootstrap with Kids to a throwdown. And we're going to get, I don't, you know, and just come up with it,
Sure.
whatever the challenge is, even if it's likes or listeners or downloads on whatever platform, or if it's a bootstrapping guys, man, there's a lot of things we could challenge each other to.
Sure. Like just as a corollary to that, I listened to the Tim Ferriss show, and he interviewed Schwarzenegger for the most recent episode, and he wants to get 1 million downloads for it. So
Nice.
one of his tweets was, so all you marketing geniuses out there, what's the most creative way to pump the episode up ahead of time to get 1 million downloads? So that's not really what we're talking about, but yeah, that's kind of an internal challenge for himself.
Yeah, that builds engagement. I remember being in the car being like, man, I feel a part of this. I went on to the other podcast and left a review, and I checked back in just to hear the number updates, And it was like one pair had to buy the other pair dinner. I can't remember what the goal was or what it was, but that doesn't matter really at the end of the day.
One thing we should think about is there is a like a front end development podcast called
There's
Shop Talk Show.
okay.
Yep, Chris Coyer. And
Oh yeah, CSS Tricks.
it's live. And I think they're probably doing a Google Hangouts or something like
Oh,
that,
they
so
stream it
people can
live?
ask. Yeah, they stream it live. Well, so they record it. I know this is a funny way to say it. They record it live, but in like a chat room.
Got it.
So people ask questions, people comment live on the show, and so he has a co-host, and sometimes they have guests, and so that's another option. Maybe we can have it live and have, people in a chat room chatting with us and all this kind of stuff. So
In
interesting.
our brainstorming Google Doc, we had talked about, I threw out the idea that maybe every week we have a different format, slightly different format.
Sure.
Maybe we throw in, maybe we bring on Chris Coyer on 1 week, and the next week it's just you and I. Maybe we're pressed for time that week, and we got to get back to whatever it is we're doing. So we just do a quick update. But whatever it takes, A, to keep you and I interested in it, so that we don't. I think it's lame. I got to call out the Bootstrap with Kids guys. How many weeks has it been since there's been a new episode? Come on, Scott. I know you're the holdup. Come on, Scott. So. I feel so bad if there was like a death in the family or something like that. But the point being, I think there's ways we could get a podcast in, and not just to be like a total sellout and just say, "Hey guys, yeah, we're still here," and then hang up the call and 2 minute podcast. But a real like gives us an update of where we are, lets people stay engaged in our journey, maybe give them something of value that they can take away to their journey, and it doesn't need to be 2 hours or an hour. It could be a 20-30 minute podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think the reality of building a business and the life in this sense that we're going to be going through is there's not going to be exciting shit every week.
Right.
So, fucking sick. Right on, man. Well, I think we'll wrap it up. What do you think? Is there anything else we wanted to talk about?
I think we're at the bottom of the list.
Our kick-ass looking website?
We're the website is kicking my ass right now. So I threw a bunch of sample content in it just so I could see. I hate it when you set up a theme and there's nothing in it, right? So you don't know. It looks nothing like the preview did on ThemeForest or wherever you got the thing. And so you set it up and you're like, why does it look so great over there? Mine looks like ass. So I started pumping just lorem ipsum and dummy content. And I found a site where you can get filler content generated from like Star Wars or Futurama or The
Sweet,
Simpsons. So I just
sweet.
threw some random crap in there. I uploaded an audio file so I could see what that would look like. So I'm tinkering with that. The other thing is we're working on a logo. In my first inclination with the logo for the podcast cover art is who cares, right? We just throw it up there. We can change it later. But then I've been reading about what a pain in the ass it is to change it in iTunes. Like people will submit a change, and for a lot of people, it never changes for some inexplicable reason. They just never update it, and or it takes weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. And so I was thinking, man, you kind of do got to get it right out of the gate on this one thing.
Well, we got some time. I think we'll record another episode next week and then probably launch the feed. So we got another week or so to put it together.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there it
Cool.
was. That
Sounds
was
good.
episode one.
It's the best
can.
thing ever. In the can. There you go. Breck would love that one,
Does
right?
that apply to audio only?
It does now.
Nice. Oh, to steal a line for Breck, for a limited time only, we are now accepting 5-star reviews in iTunes. We will accept just for limited time only. Hurry while the supplies last. We will accept a 5-star review in iTunes.
Only five
But only
stars.
5 stars. If you only like this 4 stars, then maybe listen in next week, see if it gets better.
That's
It
right.
might, it
That's
just
right.
might
We're
not be
not
for you.
accepting.
Yeah.
We're not accepting beer donations, but maybe we'll have a beer of the week that we're drinking during the show.
Yeah,
That would be
I think I don't know if you heard the ice cubes clinking while I was talking because I get dry mouth, but I might have a cocktail next week or a beer.
There you go. There you go. All right, well, guys, we'll see you guys next week, and look forward to continuing down the journey.
All right, thanks a lot.
Wondering, for years I was adrift, directionless and wayward, lost like a swallow on a cliff. But slowly I found purpose and my life became more clear. I found my destination, yeah, but now where do I go from here? 'Cause I'm already there. I'm already everywhere. I'm already there. I'm already everywhere. I've got a wife, 2 kids, and a picket fence. Everything was hazy, now it's making sense. Alright, I made it, so now what? I paid my dues in factories, I worked until I bled. The suffering made me stronger, so I pushed to get ahead. And now I'm perched above the factory floor, looking down at my friends below. In my comfy car I drive away, but there is nowhere left to go. 'Cause I'm already there. I'm already everywhere. I'm already there. I'm already everywhere. I've got a wife, 2 kids, and a picket fence. Everything was hazy, now it's making sense. Alright, I made it, so now what? Told me that when the race is done, the finish line's behind you, and you have lost or you have won. The crowd goes home and you're still standing on that empty track. The lights are out, the crowd is gone, but there's no going back, 'cause you're already there. You're already already there.